I was basically walking up to him, say, "Hi, my name's Dave. Would you like to get married?"
Welcome to another episode of the Rogue Startups Podcast with Craig Hewitt and Dave Rodenbaugh. This is a podcast documenting the journey of self-funded business founders and sharing lessons, tips, and tricks for businesses following the same path as ours. The journey is long and winding, but we're glad you're joining us for it. And now it's time to go rogue with Dave and Craig.
All right, welcome to episode 85 of the Rogue Startups Podcast. Today, Craig and I are living, breathing cold email, and we're going to talk a little bit about what techniques and templates and things are working for us based on some listener feedback that we had from our last episode. Craig, how are you this week?
Man, I'm doing great. It's been a really good couple of weeks. You have those times where you really get into to kind of the groove and you work really hard for, man, it's probably been a month. I was working really hard and now able to kind of bask in the glory a little bit. Like things have gotten a little easier in the last couple of weeks. So yeah, it's kind of nice.
Basking in the glory. I love that image. I can just see you sitting in front of your computer right there. In the glow of the blue LED going,
I won't talk about basking in the glory of my new Euro style swimsuit that I got for the summer. So I'll save everyone.
Oh God, please. No Speedos, man.
Oh man. But no, yeah. So we got several pieces of really solid feedback from our last episode. So yeah, I'm excited to dig into kind of what we're both doing with email. Cold and warmer email, I think. And it's a cool kind of adjunct to a lot of the content marketing inbound stuff that we all know too well. So I'm excited to dig into it.
Yeah, before we get into that, you want to talk updates. How are things with Podcast Motor?
Yeah, things are really good with Podcast Motor. We had a really it's here towards the end of March now, and it's been a really good month. We've added a couple of new customers, which is good. You know, the last couple of months we're pretty flat at best, and so it's nice to kind of be picking things up. We've landed a couple pretty big volume customers this month, so that's really good. I mean, we only have 25 or 30 customers, so a couple new big customers is really nice for us. I was playing around with a couple different formats for how we kind of sell our services, and I'm not entirely sold on the best way to do that. You know, so far, everything we've advertised, at least, has been like a monthly recurring subscription, and have looked at kind of like an a la carte or pay by the episode structure. And I think that there's definitely some people that's for, but what I've settled on is kind of having that by request and not really having people be able to buy that on the website. So we have some customers who've been with us for a year and a half who pay by the episode. But only because they asked, and I think that's a fair way to keep it. But it was something I was struggling with for a while, and so I feel good about that. That hey, the people who are really serious about their podcast usually put a show out every week or consistently every other week, and they're on those fixed payment plans. But some people need hey, we're going to do 3 this month and 7 the next month and 2 the next month, kind of a more variable plan. So we want to accommodate those people and give them a little more open door into that than we have in the past. So that's got you kind of mentally struggle with these things. I kind of mentally struggled with the best way to do that. And I think that's a pretty good way to do it. The other big decision I made just today actually is regarding our hosting plan, our hosting platform for Seriously Simple Podcasting. I had originally planned on it living on the Podcast Motor website, as like a subdomain. And I decided today that really as a user and as a business, it makes more sense for all of the plugin related things to be on the plugin website. So seriouslysimplepodcasting.com is a great website that Hugh put together and gets great traffic, and it's all really targeted traffic. So I think it makes sense to keep the hosting platform based there. For people who don't know Podcast Motor, it's a easier sell. For them to sign up for an add-on subscription to a plugin they already know, rather than they know Seriously Simple Podcasting, and now we have to go sell them on Podcast Motor and all this kind of stuff. So it's kind of a big change in direction in terms of theming, but I haven't done a ton of pre-selling or anything under the Podcast Motor name. So I feel good about making that decision now, as opposed to 2 months from now after we launched or something. So yeah, I think if you look at, you know, things like Easy Digital Downloads is all on its own domain, and your Business Directory plugin is on its own domain. I think that's the standard practice, I think. So,
well, it certainly has some advantages, not just in brand recognition, but let's say down the line you want to sell it.
Exactly. Yeah.
You've got something that is an autonomous, atomic thing that is separate from the rest of the business. And, you know, it also opens you up to, like you said, the cross promotion activities, which you now have to actively do as opposed to passively do if you just bring them over to the Podcast Motor website. But I would say that that's still a pretty serious advantage there. So that's good. That's
yeah,
cool.
Yeah. And I mean, the bit of dirty secret around productized services, they're not highly sellable. You know, if you talk to guys like Thomas Smail from FEI, you know, a productized service won't sell for nearly the multiple that, you know, something like a plugin or a SaaS with a plugin would sell for. So even just if you would extrapolate out that revenue, if I had it under the Podcast Motor name, it now would be worth more all living under its own world. So we'll probably set up our own Stripe account and everything for it, so everything is a little easier to break out if and when we wanted to do something different down the road.
Yeah, having all of that stuff separate up front is definitely an advantage. I'm very glad that I've done that with the plugins here, although the way I did it with the plugins, in retrospect, I kind of wished I had done it slightly differently, where I actually had two separate payment accounts instead of unifying them under one payment account.
Yeah.
Because now they're basically tied to each other. I mean, I could split it out and create the new payment accounts, but if I add recurring payments in there, then I've got two different accounts to deal with, and there are still some advantages to putting them together. And it still feels to me like having them bundled. I don't want to say that they're really the same plugin, because they're not, but the way that I've seen people use them makes it seem like if they install one, there's probably like a 45% chance they want to install the other one, or they'll flip between them because they're not sure which of the two is the best fit for their use case. Because sometimes it's not like a straight directory or straight classified. So yeah, decisions like that haunt your business later on for sure. But I think that's a good one for you.
So you have them, you have two separate like Stripe accounts going into the same bank account, or you have separate, You would like to have separate bank accounts, you mean?
No, actually, what I have is I have one PayPal account that is used for both sets of plugins. And okay. I mean, it's even worse than that. So the PayPal account used to be for the classifieds plugin. Then I acquired the business directory. So then I sort of renamed what would show up on the statement so that it would say AWPCP or BD. I mean, they gave you like 10 characters to show up on the frickin' credit card statement. It was ridiculous. Right. So, but at least that worked for a while. And then all of a sudden PayPal came back to me one day and said, well, you know, we need to actually send a statement to the IRS of how much you're making here in a 1099. So do you actually have a company name called that? And I'm like, well, no, my company's a consulting company and here's my EIN. And they're like, oh, you have to put that name on your business. And I'm like, oh, hell. And as soon as I did that, guess what happened? I got chargebacks for people that are thinking that this is fraudulent stuff that got charged to their credit card, because 45 days later, they don't remember what the hell they paid for.
Sure.
And when they go asking to other people, did you buy something from Skyline Consulting? No, I didn't buy anything. I bought something else. Oh, that must be fraud.
Yep.
So that part sucks. And, you know, had I thought about this differently, I probably would have set it up on Stripe. I probably would have put that information in there, because Stripe doesn't demand that. They have a separate thing where they say, who do we send the 1099 to? What do you want on the statement? And they don't make it one thing. That PayPal makes it that one thing. So I hate PayPal for that. But it's, you know, I've got history with them at this point, and yeah, I don't want to go through the whole pain of migrating right now. I probably should.
I'll tell my PayPal story another day, but it is horrible. So yeah, I have no love for PayPal. I will never use them again.
You know, there's lots of people that are in your boat on that one. I have heard many of those stories, and they all sound truly just on the border of ludicrous. And they suck. They absolutely suck. And they obviously screwed people out of tens of thousands of dollars. I've just not had that experience with them myself. I mean, I have some other little quirks and things that are painful. But for the most part, PayPal's been okay with me. So
yeah, yeah. Well, good. That's good. It's dead simple. I mean, we still do some stuff through PayPal for like invoicing. And it's really simple like that. And in some ways, I like it. It's just the setting up is a hassle. But anyways, I'm getting off on a tangent. Don't get me started.
Okay, I won't.
So how about you, man? How are things going with Recapture?
Things are going well with Recapture. So I have been focused a lot on cold email, which we've talked about in previous episodes. So I've had a couple of cohorts run through a couple of different variants of email, and I got some statistics back on those, and there was a clear winner between the two of them. People were actually responding to one and not so much the other. And my open rates were a little low for both. So I've now revamped both of those into a new campaign. But the other part that I was realizing there is, you know, I was being overly direct with my emails and it wasn't really getting people to convert. You know, I was basically walking up to them, say, "Hi, my name's Dave. Would you like to get married?" You know, that kind of a thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
And which is a little too much considering that I'm not necessarily well known in this space. So the takeaway that I came from that when, and I also, I should add to this, I looked at my statistics from the last course that I did, and the people were going to my site and they were spending a ludicrously large amount of time there. So there was obviously some interest from reading the emails, going and then browsing around on the website. But once they did that, I had nothing else for them to do. I had no way to capture who it was. I didn't have a good way to tag who they were because I'm using Mike's new Bluetick tool, and he doesn't really have tagging to go back with that. So I can't tell that visitor X, you know, visited page Y on my site and tag them somewhere. That's more of like a drip thing. So I realized that I needed some way to catch them so that I could market to them again, maybe more slowly. So now I've decided I have to do an autoresponder course and put it on my site. So I'm in the middle of doing that right now. And then once I have that launched, I'm going to run my next round of cold email, and I think I'm going to have better luck on two fronts. One, I'll actually know who are the people that are interested and then have a specific set of emails that I can start contacting through drip and tagging them and doing workflows and more complicated marketing stuff. And it'll give me a chance to hone the message so that I don't have to be quite so, "Hi, do you want to get married?" You know, I can talk about the benefits of Recapture, but, you know, and get them to visit the website with the confidence of knowing there's something more for them to do when they get there so that I can catch them and do more with them and nurture them along the way. So that's taking a little bit of time to get set up, but yeah, that's mostly what I've been focused on. I also went last week and did a little vacation with the family, went out to Los Angeles, went to Universal Studios and had some Harry Potter time with my girls who loved every minute of it there.
Yeah?
And yeah, it was – oh, God, you know, amusement parks, they're just hell for adults in my opinion. No. It's just stimulation overload and sugar bombs everywhere, and you're constantly being advertised to, and it's like this stimulation overload. You're, you know, every line that you're in, they're trying to do something to keep you from being bored, but at the same time, you're like, can I just have a not 3D, not flashing lights, not, you know, holographic experience here? You know, my kids were really into that. But by the time we were done with it, I could tell that even they were a little overstimulated by the whole thing. And they were like, I'm ready to go home.
Yeah. That's great. I mean, it's great that they were able to sort of, you know, put it down and want to walk away, right?
It was a little surprising because I know, like, my middle daughter is really into media. If you let her – you give her an iPad and free time, she'll just sit there and be glued to it the rest of the day.
Uh-huh.
And until you pry it out of her, you know
– cold, dead
grips. Cold. My daughter's not going to die from this here. That was a wrong image to put up. But pry it from her, you know, gripped, angry fingers as I say, it's time to shut off the media.
Yeah.
But that wasn't really the case here, so I thought that was kind of interesting. But yeah, that was good. So it was good to get some downtime on that. And yeah, so that's what I've been up to here. I'm also still thinking about, you know, larger issues about pricing and things like that. So we should probably have another episode that talks about pricing, price increases, stuff like that, because I'm definitely going to be raising prices on both Recapture and the plugins both.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Yeah, yeah. Especially after Big Snow Tiny Conf on the plugins. That was obvious, but this was one of those things about Recapture where I think I'm in kind of a quandary with the pricing in general, where people aren't taking the tool seriously enough because the pricing is not super high compared to other competitors. And I'm also not really capturing the value based on the ROI people are getting out of it. So, you know, people are recovering tens to hundreds of thousands of dollars and they're paying like, you know, $98 to get that. So you're like, wait a minute. Something's off on that.
And you have a unique opportunity to have kind of graduated prices too, right? Like by the percentage or something like that.
Well, see, we should probably save this for another episode. Because there's different ways to tier that pricing. And, I've been thinking about different ways to segment on the value. And I read a great book, which was The Strategy and Tactics of Pricing by Thomas Nagel, John Hogan, and Joseph Zale, which reads like a whole series of academic papers that were put together on pricing. It's dense, really dense. And when they start using like adroitly, you know, you have to pay close attention, you know?
What?
Yes. That's right. Well, when I did that last night, I was thinking to myself, when was the last time I heard the word adroitly?
Right.
It's not a normal conversation word in my house or within my circles or whatever. Maybe I just hang out with less sophisticated people, but yeah.
Interesting. Yeah, no, that'd be a great discussion. I have some of my own pricing things. We've gone through a lot of pricing changes with Podcast Motor, but with the hosting platform and everything, we have some price strategies that we're looking at. So yeah, that'd be a fun episode.
Cool. Well, let's talk about cold email here and templates and questions to ask yourself and things that are working and things that are not. Where do you want to start?
Yeah, let's do it. So I think the first thing for me is kind of looking at a system. So it's kind of like for me, a lot of things you do it once or twice by yourself and very manually, and you say, does this kind of work at all? And then from there, kind of what's going to be the goal and the bigger picture. And for us, so far, it's working really well. It's working in a couple different ways. One is kind of like brand awareness. The other one is like actually converting customers. And the other is outreach, actually, for some of our content marketing. So we're using cold outreach to get people on our podcast. So after we did our first couple of campaigns for each of those kind of goals, and they were working, we kind of looked at it and said, okay, how do we start doing this on an ongoing basis and getting more leads in that part of the funnel? And then how do we start measuring and optimizing it? And we're not to the measuring and optimizing place yet, but I think you probably are. But for us, it's been a lot of, you know, the first two segments that we sent out for each of those kind of goals and objectives were really positive. And from that, we've learned some stuff and we're iterating from there. But I think that building a system around it is really important. Otherwise, and this is the same with like paid acquisition, you're kind of like that one hit wonder and you say, wow, that was great. Why did that work so well? If you don't know why it worked so well, then going and doing it again or doing it every week or whatever gets to be really difficult. So I think once you do it and it works okay, then it's time to kind of take a step back and say, okay, why did it work and how can we do that again? And that's kind of where we are right now, which is a cool place to be.
Yeah, I'd say that's a very good place to start with cold emails there. I'd say we're probably closer to that stage as well. I mean, for me, I'm more – so here's what I did when I went out for the cold emails. The first thing I went out and did is, you know, what any of us would do if you are new to a subject. You go out and Google a bunch of articles on this and then find – you know, there's a bunch of sites that I knew were more oriented towards – cold emails or had more experts on there regarding cold emails. So those were sort of bumped a little higher in my list. And then others, I was just looking for templates and stuff like that. So, you know, found stuff on LeadFuse and I found stuff on ConversionXL. There was some stuff on HubSpot. So I pulled all of these sources and, you know, just sort of tried to synthesize that information to see like what would be the best overall approach what are some common approaches? You know, which one is the one that's going to work the best for recapture? What are common subject lines? What's the right number of emails to send? You know, all of those sorts of questions to figure out up front. And then based on that, I put something together that I thought would work for recapture, and that's what I sent out as my first one. Then I pitched that to my mastermind, and they came back and said, well, you know, you're a little wishy-washy on this one here, despite the fact I had followed one of these, quote, effective templates.
Uh-huh.
It's so, you know, and the guy had a lot of experience with cold email, so he's like, yeah, you know, you just got to get out there and ask them. Like, you can't be dancing around here. This sounds like you're going to waste a bunch of my time. I don't want to respond to this. I'm like, all right. So he made some suggestions to make it more direct. And so I did that, and I changed it, and I did actually see more responses from it, both positive and negative.
A lot more fuck-offs, right?
I didn't have that many. Well, I had zero fuck-offs from the first one, and I also had zero of anything from the first one. They didn't respond at all. I had a couple of bounced emails. I don't think that counts. The second one, I actually got a couple of fuck-offs, but I did get four other people that said, hey, I'm actually kind of interested in what you have to say here.
There you go.
So by being more polarizing, I actually got more effective. Now, you know, you have to have a thick skin to deal with the first part of that, but the second at least gives you something to work with. So I guess the first lesson that I've really learned on cold email is there is a ton of shit out there about cold email, and everybody will tell you, use this formula, it works, or here's a perfect template for cold email, that always works. That's bullshit.
Yeah. Yeah.
It doesn't always work. You've got to find something that is the right fit for your audience with the right message, with the right subject line, with, you know, the right timing, everything. And, you know, all of these quote unquote proven templates were not necessarily the right thing. So that one template that I pulled was supposedly like one of the better ones. And I think this was from I pulled this one off of Kissmetrics or what is the other one? Mixpanel maybe? I don't remember. One of the marketing blogs. And I was like, ooh, I'm super excited about this one here because this is coming from people that I really know and respect, or, you know, work for companies that I know and respect. Didn't work at all. Didn't, you know, had no resonance with the audience whatsoever. So I just didn't have the right subject lines that would make sense to them. So when somebody says that this is a, you know, tried and true, never fails kind of thing here, I would treat that with great skepticism until you've actually tested it against your audience.
Yeah. You know, the thing this reminds me of is something we used to say in sales a lot is the message has to sound good coming out of your mouth, right? And so that's what you're talking about is like the Kissmetrics or the Close.io or whoever have the message that's coming from those people and talking to their audience, but both of those are different for you. So you can kind of take the lessons, I think, that each of them, each of these templates or proven systems or whatever kind of are showing you. But yeah, you definitely have to say it in a language that you can then follow up with, because eventually you'll be writing the response to that. So it has to sound kind of consistent. But also to your audience, you know, the language and the tone and the aggressiveness or whatever you want to call that, has to be right, because yeah, it sounds like you went from really vague to more direct, but also probably more impactful. Cause I mean, your tool directly affects the top line, right, of people's businesses. So I think that the more directly you can speak to that, the better. As opposed to this kind of whimsical thing that a lot of people tout.
Yeah. So I would say I would sum up what you just said as be authentic to your audience, whatever that means for that audience. So, you know, with e-commerce owners, the whole vague, would you like to jump on a, you know, 20-minute phone call or whatever, does not resonate with them at all. They're just like, you're wasting my time with that bullshit. I've got no time for that. And I give exactly zero fucks for that email right there.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, you got to move on, you know, give me the value proposition. So I'm kind of getting this image in my mind of what an e-commerce store owner is dealing with. And they've probably got like a million things showing up in their inbox and they're like, give me a reason I should pay attention to this.
Yeah.
So if you can't get to the point and give them a reason to open your email, you're wasting their time. So,
and you have to do it quickly, right? I mean, that's the other part of the cute title, like a subject line or the whimsical open or something like that, is if you don't provide value, and like in the inbound world, we think of value as like teaching somebody something. But in the outbound world, I think we think of providing value as like showing what your solution can do. If you don't do that quickly, then you're going to get deleted or archived or whatever before they have a chance to really understand what you're all about. So you got to you got to get to the point quickly, I think, without being, you know, rude and intrusive.
Yep. Yep. So that's another thing, is that the content – well, this goes back to like – do you remember that time that we had Joanna Weave on, and she – well, you weren't there. Of course you don't remember that. So there was a time that she was on, and she had just done her MicroConf talk, and she was talking about how effective copy – that every single sentence in an email has to have a job. The subject line has to get them to open it. The first sentence of the email has to get them to read the second sentence. And the second sentence has to get them to move to the next paragraph. And your call to action has to get them to go click a button, fill out a form, whatever the hell you want them to do. Give them your email address. You've got to have something compelling in every single sentence, because if there's one sentence in there where they read it and they go, eh, they're going to delete it. They're going to walk away from it. They're going to stop engaging with your email. So every single sentence, every single word has to count.
Yeah.
And that lesson sort of stuck with me as I was reading these emails and going through them, and I was ruthlessly editing and going, you know, that sentence is just – it doesn't do anything. It doesn't make the user want to move on. It doesn't give them some value. It doesn't talk about their problem. You know, like I would just sort of evaluate it based on that and then ditch it if it didn't, you know, fit into some one of those things there.
So I think we should try to get a little granular and talk about specific things that we've learned to try and help other folks out there that are maybe getting into it. And I'll go first, I guess, with something I learned in the last round of cold email that we did in terms of subject line. And I think subject is obviously, like you were just talking about, Dave, like the most important thing maybe, because if you don't get them to open the email, then they're not going to read it and they're not going to click or do whatever. And I think for us, in the podcasting world at least, the thing that's worked best for us is listing, and we do this via like a Liquid template, the name of someone's podcast as the subject line. And I think you could maybe do it as like the store name or whatever that you're emailing to, but it's something that's obviously personalized. You know, you and I get a lot of emails that are like poorly formatted, where they have roguestartups.com in the subject line, and I think that's bad form. So you wouldn't have like the actual URL, but something that's personalized and relevant and is I don't want to say this is personal to somebody, right? So personalized and personal are different things.
Personalized and personal, just personalized.
No, but that someone would take very seriously, as opposed to all the other fucking emails that they get. You know, if you saw your name on an email, you would probably open it, right?
Yeah, but I mean, I think so. There's a two-pronged attack there. Like, number one, there's personalization, where they just randomly throw your name in there. Hey, Dave, you know,
yeah.
I know but that doesn't really necessarily make the email personal. So I would say that the distinction that I just made fun of you for is actually important. So they can easily personalize it by saying, hey, I just saw your Magento store, blah, or I read your podcast, foo, or whatever. That's personalization. But making it personal is where you not only understand what it is that they're talking about, but you make your solution or your pitch relevant to that thing. So I remember one time we got a pitch for somebody to be on Rogue Startups, and they were selling something that had absolutely zero to do with our audience. I don't even remember what the dude was selling, but I remembered when I read through this whole thing here, I was like, well, clearly they knew our name, they knew our podcast, oh, they totally failed the personalization test here, or the personal test, because they don't understand what our audience is. They've never listened to this podcast. They don't know a thing about what it is we do, or who we talk about, or what is our subject matter. So you've got to have both, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And I think you can prove that in a couple of ways. One is actually capturing the right data, but the other is capturing several parts of data when you're doing your lead collection or your prospecting list collection. Again, I'll use our example just because it's the only one I know really well. So we collect the name of the podcast, the category it's in iTunes, the host's first name and last name. If there's two of them, we collect both of those, and the website that their show links to. And we use each of those in each of the emails as a liquid template field. And I think that when you're reading that as a recipient of those emails, four or five personal things in an email starts to feel really kind of one-on-one.
It feels like you definitely did your homework with them for sure.
Yeah.
In my case, I don't have tons of information to go with that. I've got like their store URL, I've got their title, their first and last name of the owner, the name of the store itself. But you can put things that are deeply personal in the subject line that sort of catch their attention. So I can say store name is losing money. That's the subject line.
Nice.
So that's the one I'm going to test next. And right there, that's basically, you know, it hits them in the gut. Because, you know, they're immediately going to open that and say, how do you know my store is losing money? Wait a minute. Who the hell are you? What do you know about this? And then you launch into a more detailed pitch, but you've gotten them to open it by using that sort of a thing right there.
Do you worry, just specifically for that subject line, do you worry that a negative subject line will perform poorly? As opposed to, no. You know, store X could be making 67% more?
You know, I haven't tested it yet, so I can't really give you a specific answer on that. But the goal that I'm trying to do here is to increase my open rates.
Mm-hmm.
So if I increase my open rates, but then I don't see people engage in future emails, then I know that the negative headline works to get them to open it, but then they don't do anything afterwards.
Yeah.
So the question is, what kind of an impact does that have on their behavior after you've stated that right there? Because you kind of want to give them the hair on fire problem. Well, that's their hair on fire problem. You know, there's statistics out there that say your abandoned cart rates are insanely high, and we can help you with that. So, you know, it changes into a pitch, but it goes back to your store is losing money. We know that all e-commerce stores are losing money. That's just the nature of e-commerce. And you want them to move to the next step, which is to do something about it. So I got to find out, does that negative one work better than the positive one? So my last one was, I would say, more neutral. So this one is going clearly more negative. Maybe next one I'll try more positive. But, you know, my goal is to get them to open the email and then act on it. So I'll have to see. I don't know.
Yeah. Interesting. I guess moving into the email a little further, when you go into your email templates, I guess, first of all, how many emails are you sending in a sequence?
So right now I'm sending four emails in a sequence,
mm-hmm.
Where I basically have something there to give them a pitch and then a follow-up with the benefits, sort of reminding them of the benefits from that pitch. A third one saying, why didn't they really respond? And then make it like super easy for them to respond with a 1 to 5 list and just give them 5 common reasons. And I had something in there. It was super cutesy, but I've gotten some very negative feedback on that. So I eliminated the super cutesy options out of there, which other cold email pitches were saying, hey, you should put this in there to add some personality. I put it in there. I put the personality. Everybody hated the personality. So I took it out. Once again, you got to test this shit, right?
Yeah.
And then the last one is, you know, the breakup email.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah. Now, so, what about you? What are you doing?
Yeah. So I'm doing the same aside from the breakup email. I just don't see any value in it. I don't see telling someone that you're going to stop cold emailing them as an incentive for them to do something, right? That'd be great. Stop fucking bothering me. I don't see the value. Again, talking about trying to deliver value to these people in a proactive way. I see the, yeah, ours is very similar. So the first is it tries to start a dialogue. So it's kind of, hey, great show, blah, blah, blah. Just be curious how you're doing your post-production. You know, this is kind of who we are. We'd love to chat about your show sometime. Second one goes into, you know, kind of like, hey, you know, what would you do with 3 more hours a week kind of thing? This is what we do. We'd love to chat sometime. And then the third is kind of similar to yours of like, you know, curious why you didn't respond type email. You know, would love to kind of learn more about you and your show and kind of what keeps you up at night is the title of it. But yeah, I don't have a breakup email. Yeah, I don't see the value in it, I guess.
Well, my last breakup email probably wasn't as strongly worded as my next one is. And so, again, I'm trying another negative tactic on this one that basically says, I guess you like wasting money, is my subject line. Yeah. Okay. So I'll see how that one pans out. Maybe that one's going to be fall flat on its face. But, you know, what's strange is I was seeing open rates that were not that much different than the first three emails. So people were opening the last email.
That's great. I mean, you should see, I don't know, 15% reduction in open rates over the course of 3 or 4 emails.
Yeah, I wasn't seeing that. It was about the same for all of them. Yeah. Maybe, let's see. Well, no, I guess the last one was 15%. It could be that. I don't have the statistics in front of me. I was trying to remember what that was. But yeah, that sounds about right.
Yeah, yeah. Interesting. And so then sort of diving into the emails, aside from copy, which we talked about a little bit, and obviously testing everything is super important, and all these tools like Bluetick make testing and evaluating your tests really easy. In terms of kind of call to action, though, because I think that's the real guts of what the email copy does, you have a single call to action, or are you linking like to your site and to a Calendly link or anything like that? Or is it, what's your call to action strategy?
So the Calendly link thing didn't work for me.
Okay.
That was part of my vague email. Got no response on that one. Not a single person signed up, not a single person responded. So that was not a strategy that worked.
We saw the same thing, by the way.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it might work in the right industry, but it doesn't work for me. So right now what I'm doing as a direct pitch is I'm trying to say, can I help you set this up? You know, who put me in touch with the right person and I'll get this thing installed for you to get them so they can see what their abandoned cart problem looks like. Now, that was getting me more responses last time, but I wasn't getting anybody saying, yeah, okay, here's the name of my developer, make it happen. So that's why I wanted to add a secondary call to action. So there's in two of my emails now, there's links to case studies on the site. That was where I was getting the most links originally, or most clicks originally, was to the case study.
Yeah.
So now what I'm going to do is I'm putting an email subscription link in there as a secondary call to action to see if that resonates with them more than the you know, do you want me to install this for you, as opposed to would you like to learn more about abandoned cart emails? So now they've got a choice about what they want to do. So this still gauges interest, because they might be interested in abandoned cart emails where I can nurture them through that, but they're not ready to jump in and do the install yet because they don't trust me. They don't know me.
So you have the subscribe link right in the email itself.
I will in the new series. And I'm also going to leave the little drip widget on my site. Sure, so if they go browse the site, they'll see it.
Yeah.
So that's my change in tactic this time, and we'll see how that works. I don't know.
Gotcha. Super interesting. Yeah. So you have a couple of interesting things going on. I think one is the intimate nature of making people or saving people money. Is great. It's a great position to be in. I think we talk a lot about how close to the dollar you are, and you're super, super close, which is great, but it makes the language that you use be really impactful to people, making it a very emotional thing for them. So I think that's really interesting how the change in your language will affect opens and clicks and results, because it could be really, really great. I think you won't see a small change.
I think when I get the right message, it's going to resonate hard with the right people. So I just have to figure out what that looks like right now and whether the people that I'm emailing are the right people or not. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, kind of going back to the beginning a bit of making a process for us, we've done a fair amount on kind of how to capture good prospects. I think it probably has to do with why our opens and clicks rates are so good relative to kind of what you read. But I think we're at a bit of an advantage because the podcasting world is very well contained within iTunes. I mean, everyone that podcasts in iTunes, so that's obviously kind of where to go. But I think that we're qualifying people before we even send them emails. And I think that, you know, for us, it's like, you know, have they done more than like 10 podcasts? Is there some sort of brand behind them? Like, I don't know that we would probably sell to you and I now because there's some sort of, we each have kind of personal brands, I guess, behind our podcast, but the guy in his basement talking about Star Wars,
I love that guy.
Is great, but he's not going to buy a podcast motor service, right?
That's probably true.
But anyway, so I think there's something to be said for when you're setting up your system or if you're going out and doing the data collection yourself, initially kind of thinking about getting good leads to begin with. This is where something like LeadFuse does really good is they have a system for doing this. And we do it very manually right now. But I'd be interested from your perspective, what kind of system do you have for collecting leads and how are you thinking about kind of pre-qualifying those before they even go in your system?
Ah, well, see, this is my secret sauce right now. I don't want to reveal that bit of it, but I'm qualifying it by trying to find the right kinds of stores that are out there. And it seems like there's a pattern based on the stores that I already have as customers and the ones that have higher volume, they have more history, that sort of stuff is a better fit because they've got customers running through. You know, if you're not having carts get abandoned, you're going to have a hard time getting abandoned cart recovery. So you don't want like new stores, for example, brand new stores with no traffic and they're just getting started. Like abandoned cart recovery should be like not even in their top 10 list of problems. So those are definitely not that interesting for me right now. So the key is to find the right kinds of stores that I think would be more appropriate for recapture.
Gotcha.
Yeah, that's what I'm doing right now.
Yeah, at the theme of it, I think we're talking about the same thing. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you have to have real prospective buyers that have a problem.
Exactly. They have to understand what this is, how bad it is, and that this could be easily fixed by just signing up for this one thing over here. So anybody that can get through those mental steps is usually a pretty easy convert to this whole thing here. Yeah. And you know, it's sort of the same thing that I have with the plugins. If you can find like developers that are on board with you, they can kind of become your sales force as well. But, you know, I'm still new in the Magento community, so I don't know that many Magento agencies or developers. So getting them to evangelize for recapture is a long-term goal, but not a short-term one. And, you know, it's more about education and putting your name out there and stuff like that. So that's sort of a longer-term way of getting the right leads because that developer is going to know what stage they're at with the store and know whether an abandoned cart solution is appropriate or not appropriate for them and then make a recommendation based on that. So once you've been recommended by somebody they trust, you're in like Flynn, right?
Right. So speaking of this, what are you doing to try and get better entrenched in the community?
So that's a good question. Right now, the one thing I wish I was able to do this year, and I just couldn't make it work logistically, was to go to the main Magento conference, which is Magento Imagine. It is literally the day – it ends the day before MicroConf this year.
Vegas also or
– Also in Vegas, like just down the strip.
Make it happen, Dave. What's up?
I could have made it happen. I had a discussion with my wife about it logistically. She's like, I can't have you out for a week. After you just went out of town before this and cost wise, like it was a significant cost hit because by the time I found out about this conference, it's like a couple of X's, several X's higher than MicroConf by far.
Wow.
Oh yeah. Okay. Oh yeah. So yeah, like the cost of the conference itself is like 3x what MicroConf cost me, and then the hotel on top of that is also like 2.5x for those nights that I'm there, unless I were to like go some or off strip hotel, which in my experience has never been that valuable because you spend so much time going back and forth, you're wasting your valuable networking time.
Sure.
So, you know, I just couldn't do it all logistically, financially. Yeah, that's really what I should have done, is gone there this year to connect with other developers, other stores, other people in the Magento community, you know, people on Twitter. So that's definitely on my agenda for next year. There's also a ton of other random Magento events. They're called Meet Magento. So I think it's a mixture of stores and developers that just show up all over the world, like literally all over the world. There's probably one in your backyard in France. No kidding on this one.
Yeah, yeah. No, there, sure.
You could probably like take a stone from Annecy and hit one in France, hit one in Italy, hit one in Germany. Throw really hard, you might hit Belgium. And seriously, there's going to be events probably in all of those places over the course of 2017.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah. So I'm going to try to hit some of those, and then just trying to hit some local meetups. So I found one here locally that I'm going to connect with, and that way I can, you know, have face-to-face time with the developers. But yeah, just building a presence in that community, this is definitely – it's like content marketing. It doesn't happen overnight. You're going to have to build it slowly, and it's going to take, you know, pressing the flesh and FaceTime and all kinds of messy stuff that isn't easy or quick to cultivate.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's interesting. So I'm looking at my my kind of conference calendar for the rest of the year, and I originally had thought that MicroConf Europe would be in the late summer. It's when it's been, so like August or something. Turns out that the entire continent of Europe is on vacation for August, so even having it in September would be tough because everyone's just gotten back to work. So it looks like that potentially could be pushed back now. So I've looked at like a SaaS conference in September in Ireland, but I'm more so thinking about, like you're talking about, getting into the community. WordCamp Europe is in Paris in June, and I probably will go to it. One, it's cheap. It's like $40, and I can take the train up and just be gone for 2 days.
Yeah, that's totally reasonable. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I think it should be a relatively impactful sort of trip and not so expensive and difficult to get to. But yeah, I think that you're spot on with definitely making the Magento Imagine a priority next year. But probably going this year might have almost been too much, right? You just kind of are getting your feet wet with the tool, and if you can go to these local meetups or, you know, a Colorado or West Coast specific one this year, then that conference next year would be that much more impactful, right?
I think so. You know, when I was getting ready to sign up for the conference, one thing that sort of stuck in the back of my mind was, do I really feel like I've got something to A, contribute within the community? Mm. And do I feel like I could really talk about Recapture well in a way that I could pitch it to somebody and feel comfortable that I know what I'm talking about, know that it fits their solution? You know, if you get a developer in the room over there and you don't know the differences between Magento 1 and Magento 2, you know, you're not going to score a lot of points with them on that. And I still don't feel totally comfortable with all of those things. But as an integration in Magento like that, I should know that. I just don't yet. It's just, you know, it hasn't been one of the top 10 things that are hair on fire problems that I'm dealing with in Recapture right now. So, you know, there's definitely stuff I need to learn in order to be a more effective community member, I think. And there would be a ton to learn while I was there. I'm sure I could have gotten value out of it, but from the contribution standpoint, I didn't feel like I was ready to contribute yet. So that made me hesitate as well.
Yeah, yeah. Interesting. So I think we should talk about MicroConf next week. MicroConf is coming up the first full week of April, right?
Woohoo! Yes. Yes, it is. My favorite event of the year.
Yeah.
And I'm disappointed to find out that your co-host of Nights and Weekends is not coming this year. So we're not going to have a live MicroConf episode with his fancy little podcast setup, because I don't have that portable podcast setup. He does.
Yeah, you might have to get your own rig, man.
Ah, man. Damn it. I gotta invest in something else, man.
That's interesting. Yeah, so no, Ken is not going. I think he's been pretty heads down with a couple things lately. So yeah, it's a shame he's not gonna be able to go. But it'd be interesting to hear. We'll talk about it next week, I guess, with kind of your goals and priorities for MicroConf. But it'll be very interesting to hear how the two different conferences go for Rob and Mike and for the people there. I think I hope it goes great, and I think it will. I think it sounds like a very savvy move for them.
Yeah, it'll be exciting to see how the conference split works this year and the groups that are attracted there. Plus, there's going to be like a combined big party on Tuesday night. So it'll be like the new starter group coming in and the growth track finishing up, and they'll all be at the same party. So this is going to be like double the size of any group I've ever been hanging around with at MicroConf. So that's going to be fascinating. I'll be interested to see how that goes.
Yeah, for sure, for sure.
So if you have any other questions or comments that you want to make about cold emails that you want us to cover in another episode, just give us a shout at podcast@roguestartups.com. We always love to hear from you. And thanks to the folks who have emailed us about this recently. This has been super fun to talk about. And if you have a minute, give us a review in iTunes. We'd really appreciate it. Thanks, and we'll see you next week.
And that's our episode for this week. If you have any questions or comments, please let us know at podcast@roguestartups.com. Subscribe to us in iTunes by searching for Rogue Startups. And be sure to visit roguestartups.com for full show notes on each episode. If you're enjoying the show, we'd sure appreciate a review in iTunes. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.